The six-part destruction of the six-part dimension of biblical marriage is nearing completion. The Bible has given us an outline for marriage. One man, one woman for life. A short little statement that outlines so much. While the Bible records the highs and lows of the human condition, we see healthy marriages like Ruth and Boaz. But we also see people of faith abandon God's design and engage in the practices of the surrounding culture, such as polygamy, like with King David. No design for marriage other than the original is ever sanctioned or promoted in Scripture. One man plus one woman for life is the assigned, prescribed, instructed, and defined model of God's plan for marriage as seen in Genesis, the teachings of Jesus, and within the New Testament. Again, one man, one woman for life is the principle laid down in Genesis. It's the model that Jesus affirms, and it's the one that the New Testament continues to teach and instruct us to follow. As we look at God's design for marriage, this definition has at least six dimensions. And yes, it may seem a little silly to break it down like this, but at this point, let's not assume anything or take anything for granted. The first is this: marriage is lifelong. Marriage is meant to be between a man and a woman for life, meaning as long as both partners are living. Second, marriage is for a man and a woman. Marriage is meant to be between two people of opposite sex, one man, one woman. Third, marriage is for two. Marriage is meant to be between two people of opposite sex, not self-marriage or between three or more people. Four, marriage is for adults. Marriage is meant to be between two adults, as opposed to one being a child or both being children. Fifth, marriage is meant for monogamy. Marriage is meant to be between two people of opposite sex in an exclusive relationship, meaning monogamy. Sixth, marriage is for people. Marriage is meant to be between two adult humans, as opposed to marriage with an animal or an object. But this structure for marriage has seen continued decline in our culture, and the circle of destruction is nearing completion. Here's how. The six-part destruction of biblical marriage. First, divorce. The destruction of marriage being for life. First, while biblically permitted in a few instances, divorce has become much more normalized, accepted, celebrated, and even promoted. To quote one comedian, Elaine Boozler, she said, "I've never been married, but I tell people I'm divorced so they won't think something is wrong with me." This joke is a cultural commentary that exposes so much about our acceptance of divorce and the continued stigmatization of singleness. Because uncharitable voices often speak up at this moment, let me just say that the Christian message is never for a person to stay in an abusive relationship. No one is saying to stay in a marriage where the other person has forsaken the covenant vows or is abusing you. Jesus isn't saying that. I'm not saying that. So let's move on. Second, gay marriage. The destruction of marriage being one man, one woman. With the Supreme Court ruling in 2015, which legalized gay marriage, what our culture has accepted is the notion that gender and sex is irrelevant for marriage. But did anyone stop to ask that if the gender of the people no longer matters for marriage, then why does the number of people matter? If two men can love each other and get married, then why not three? This, coincidentally enough, leads to number three: polyamory. The destruction of marriage between two people, one man, one woman. With no clear direction, progress becomes a path to chaos. Polyamory, meaning many loves, is on the rise, and it is the next step in our culture's progress away from biblical marriage. Again, if gender doesn't matter for marriage, then why does number? At the other end of this is the notion of self-marriage, called sologamy. Number four, pedophilia. The destruction of marriage between two adults. The signs of wanting to begin normalizing the perversion of pedophilia is found in efforts to minimize the rightfully vilified name of pedophiles with a much more inclusive sounding minor attracted persons. Add to this our culture's increasing acceptance of speaking to younger children about sexuality, and with the progressives' unwillingness to give a clear definition of marriage, the next hideous step to destroy Christian marriage is to remove the notion that marriage is between two consenting adults. But this will happen firstly through the normalization of pedophilia and the acceptance of those wanting sexual relations with children. California passed a controversial bill that led many people to believe that pedophilia was now legal in the state. While it is still illegal to have sex with a minor in California, this bill gives discretion to the judge over such cases as to whether or not to put someone on the sex offender list who has uncoerced sex with a person as young as 14, as long as there is no more than a 10-year age gap. Meaning, at the far end, a 24-year-old can have consensual sex with a 14-year-old and not be on the sex offender list if that's what the judge decides. For whatever this bill is, it's a step in a direction, but not a good direction. So that I'm not accused of misrepresenting this bill, you can find links to this bill and read more about it in the article. Fifth, open marriages, the deconstruction of marriage being exclusively between two married partners. Not just speaking of infidelity done in secret, open marriages are those marriages that freely allow each other's partner to engage in romantic as well as sexual relations with other people. Open marriages is on the rise, as seen in one CNBC published article explaining how to have an open relationship. Number 6, zoophilia, objectum sexuality, and the destruction of marriage being between two adult humans. This may seem far-fetched because the marriage between people and animals is the stuff of mythology, right? Well, with no defined end in sight, where else can our culture go than this? With the LGBTQ alphabet continuing to grow, it's understandable how people can assume this depravity is on the horizon. But wait, you may say, isn't there more to be said about Christian marriage? There are elements to Christian marriage that we could definitely add, such as how a marriage is to reflect the gospel, or we could talk about the scary words of submission or headship. While these things are definitely not part of the secular ethos of modern marriage, I guess a cross-analysis of Christian marriage versus cultural marriage in regard to these topics will just have to wait. But wait, you may say, I object to the whole notion of this article. If you find yourself on the other side of this debate, disagreeing with what is stated, I would just ask for a once and for all definition of marriage. But my guess it'll be something like this. Marriage is for each generation or society to define. Or, marriage is whatever those who are in a marriage want it to be. To which I would say, then you are saying there is no universal definition. So what are Christians to do now? What can the Christian do in response? Well, firstly, the Christian can calm down and return to a simple life of worshiping and following the commands of God. The Christian can get married according to God's plan, raise a godly family that's involved in their local church, they can love their neighbor well, and be a better example to the people around us than the example that they are getting from secular society. The Christian can share God's truth as not just black and white rules to follow, but as a better and more fulfilling plan for human flourishing. The Christian can be aware of what is happening in the world, and the Christian can show the world something better. That's what Christians are called to do as we adhere to and uphold God's beautiful design for marriage.